Hey everyone, what's going on? Welcome to a brand new edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast on the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And right now I'm going to be bringing you the latest and greatest going on around the world of Hollywood. Hope everyone is having a wonderful day so far, a wonderful week. So with this episode of the podcast, with the summer movie season coming to a close and the fall movie season on the horizon, I wanted to bring on once again a good friend of the podcast. He always comes on whenever I want to talk about these kind of preview events. And that, of course, is the managing editor over at Fandango, Eric Davis. And he's going to help us in recapping this summer movie season in kind of the big highlights of what really drew people to the theaters this summer, and also what to expect during this fall movie season. Now, before we get into the actual interview, there's one thing that I actually want to kind of keep in mind for the audience listening to this interview. This was a pre-recorded interview, so one of the big news items that happened after Eric and I talked was the fact that Dune Part 2 moved off of its November 3rd release date of this year to March 15th of 2024. So when we get to the fall season preview segment of the interview and of the show, we do talk about Dune Part 2 in its November release date. So just keep in mind when we do talk about that, this is before the news was made and announced that Dune Part 2 was moved to spring of next year. So with that out of the way, without further ado, here is my interview with Eric Davis, recapping this year's summer movie season and previewing the fall movie season ahead. Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast here on the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. So like I said on the top of the show, an exciting episode that I have in store for you today. We're going to be talking about the summer movie season 2023 and previewing the fall movie season 2023. And who do we mean by we? Well, as I always like to do in kind of recapping the summer movie season, talking about these seasons in general, always love having on Fandango managing editor over at Fandango, Eric Davis. Eric, welcome back on the show. It's great to see you. Hope you've been having a wonderful summer. Have you been?
Yeah, man, it's been good. It's been a fun summer. A lot of good movies, that I've enjoyed. Barbenheimer was a thing that was a lot of fun. So, yeah, it's good. You know, even here as we record this in late August, good movies in August. Some of the best that we've seen this summer. So, it's been a real good summer.
Yeah, and especially coming off of the last couple of years, I think just to have all these big summer movies for people to go see, I think is very, very exciting overall. And it's going to be an exciting fall season as well. So to kind of dive into everything again, we're going to be talking about the summer right now, getting into the fall a little bit later. But I wouldn't be doing this podcast justice. I wouldn't be doing us justice if I did talk about probably the big thing of this summer movie season, probably the biggest movie moment, pop culture moment of this year, of course, which is Barbenheimer. Barbie Oppenheimer just took the world by storm, the box office by storm, and just did insane numbers at the box office. So when we look at this, and I remember when you came on earlier in the summer season around May, and we talked about what's going to be the big thing, what's going to be kind of the Top Gun Maverick of this season that's just going to get everyone to go into the theaters. We thought it might be Mission Impossible. We thought it could be something like maybe Indiana Jones, but it did turn out to be Barbenheimer. So why and how did this become the movie moment event of the summer and so far really the year?
Yeah, it's wild. You know, I think I look at sort of since COVID, there have been sort of three really big moments like Barbenheimer. I think Spider-Man No Way Home was one of those moments. Top Gun Maverick was one of those moments. And then Barbie and Oppenheimer. And I think really, you know, I think it began in terms of people being excited that these two films were coming out on the same day. They were polar opposites, very different films. But they were also two films from very beloved filmmakers, you know, Christopher Nolan with Oppenheimer and Greta Gerwig with Barbie. And I think, you know, both films, you know, Barbie sort of came out with this big, colorful, crazy, wild, meme-filled campaign. Oppenheimer was a little bit kind of keep the cards close to the vest. That's how Christopher Nolan tends to play things. But still sort of, you know, both films kind of screamed like you have to come see this. And so I think just the fact that they were opening opposite each other is really what kind of lit the flame for like social media and for film fans. And that just kind of continued to grow month after month. And then, you know, kind of it took on a life of its own. It got a nickname called Barbenheimer. And once the nickname came, then, you know, there's all other content, creative opportunities that open up. People were creating fan posters and, you know, it was Barbenheimer this and Barbenheimer that. And it almost became its own kind of thing, you know. And then as we approached the weekend, people were dressing up as Barbie cosplay or as Oppenheimer or as Barbenheimer cosplay. You know, the movie theaters were full of people going to see these. Barbie is now our number one ticket seller of the year on Fandango. And so I just think it was kind of like that word of mouth that just kind of built and built and built. And it also just shows the power of just word of mouth, but also social media. I think social media really kind of owned this Barbenheimer trend and really kind of got it out there and made people interested in it. And, you know, Barbie is this multi-generational property that appeals to a lot of people. I think they were very smart in saying that whether you hate Barbie or you love Barbie or you're indifferent about Barbie, this is still a movie you should go see. And I think that multi-generational movies right now are the ones that are really popping off, you know, because no matter what age you are, you know what Barbie is and what Barbie has, what kind of role Barbie's played in your life. And I think that's what made that very appealing. And then Christopher Nolan, you know, I think tackling one of, one of the biggest moments in history, especially American history, I think that kind of made people really excited about that as well.
No, yeah, I think everything about it is just incredible to see how it was. And I don't know if you've gone to see Barbie and Oppenheimer in theaters, but do you have like a moment in theaters where you got to see just a cool moment, whether it was people dressing up or with your own family, if you went to go see Barbie with them or any of these other films that was like a cool moment to see this is the trend that it is setting during the summer?
Yeah, I mean, I saw Oppenheimer in IMAX 70mm, which was one of my most memorable movie going experiences of the year. I live in New York City, so I saw at Lincoln Square, which is one of the biggest IMAX screens in the world. And just experiencing that film that way was super memorable for me with regards to Oppenheimer. But yeah, I was at the movies to see Barbie with my family, and a lot of people were dressed up in pink. And, you know, and this was like 2 weeks after it had already come out. So, you know, it just kind of showed you that, you know, audiences want to have these kinds of experiences. They want these films that get them so excited that they're dressing up to go see them. And it makes it an event in their lives. And that's what separates going to the movies from just kind of turning on a movie at home, is that, you know, you're going out of your house, you're dressing up, you're, you know, going with your family, you're with a crowd of strangers, and everybody's there to sort of have this same memorable experience. And I think there's just nothing that, you know, can duplicate that at home. And so, you know, I that's why it's so great to get these kinds of movies. I'd love to see more of them as well. And, you know, I definitely think that when we see something like Barbenheimer take off as much as it did, you know, how is Hollywood going to react? What are we going to see in the future? And what are the lessons that the studios will learn from the way that this exploded? But I also think it's kind of funny to me, at least as a kid who grew up in the 80s and 90s, to see, you know, the Super Mario Brothers movie and a Barbie movie being the top two movies of the year at the box office. I just find that amusing, you know, considering the fact that, you know, in cinema, the last live action Super Mario Brothers movie is like, you know, regarded as like some like rotten kind of movie. Barbie has never had a live action movie in theaters. And so it's just interesting that these two properties that have been around for so long have all of a sudden found ridiculous success at the movie theater. I just think it's a great story.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a great story. And I actually want to go to Nolan real quick, because to me, Nolan's my favorite filmmaker of our time period right now. He's absolutely amazing. What is it about him? Because this is something that we know about Nolan films. He has a name unto himself that people want to go to see. Why is it that people want to go see his films in theaters? Because Dunkirk was a big success, Interstellar, Inception, original driven creative films. And then, of course, right now with Oppenheimer, it's right now projected to potentially finish between $800-900 million. It has around $700 million right now worldwide at the box office. What is it about Nolan that appeases audiences to go see his films in theaters?
Yeah, I think because so much of the promotion of his films and so much of the way he makes his films is for the theatrical experience. And I think audiences know that about him. And so, you know, when it's a Christopher Nolan movie, you know that, okay, this guy's like shooting this in IMAX. He's making it specifically to be seen in theaters. This is something I need to experience on the biggest screen that I can find, you know. And I think over the years, you know, he has just instilled that in the audience. And so, you know, every one of the films that he makes is memorable in that way. And, you know, the audience is now trained when they see his name to kind of correlate that with, okay, this is something I'm not going to wait to watch at home because Christopher Nolan made it. And I know that he makes his movies first and foremost to be seen, you know, on big screens. And so that's why I need to go see it. You know, I just think he did a really wonderful job with Oppenheimer. I think it's one of his more emotional movies that he's ever made. You know, if I have one criticism of Chris Nolan, who I adore, just like you, I love his movies, you know, but they, you know, some of them tend to be cold movies. And I think that he really kind of introduced, you know, more romance, more emotion that we've seen from some of his films before. So I really like that about Oppenheimer. And I thought the way that they edited it was really interesting. I mean, going into Oppenheimer, I think a lot of people were like, you know, it's Chris Nolan, I'm going to go see it, but it is a 3-hour biopic. Like, what is this going to be like? You know? And I know I was surprised when I sat down at how well it was paced and how fast it moved. And I think that's what audiences are responding to as well.
And you just kind of brought it up a little earlier, and to kind of wrap this up with Barbenheimer, you talked about, you know, studios, can they replicate it? Like, what is their what are their takeaways going to be moving forward with this? For you yourself, do you think that this can be actually replicated again, or do you think that this was just a one-time thing? It just was, everything just worked in its favor, or could we see more events like this if they just kind of come together naturally?
Yeah, it's hard. I think, you know, Hollywood is going to kind of try to figure out the recipe, but sometimes there isn't, you know, sometimes it is sort of like the fact that both of these movies were just placed on the same weekend. You know, that's what kind of lit the flame. And, you know, that flame was tossed over to sort of film fans and you know, and cinephiles, and, you know, and they kind of took that baton and then turned it into Barbenheimer. And then once it was turned into Barbenheimer, it was unleashed on the masses. Every local news station was reporting on it. It was like the hot story. So in a lot of ways, like, it's hard to replicate, you know. It's hard to kind of say, yeah, let's take two big movies and put them on the same weekend next summer and just, you know, hopefully this happens again. You know, it may not. You know, I think sometimes you just don't know when it's going to happen. I think if there's one trend that I'm looking at that I mentioned earlier that I think we've seen with Spider-Man No Way Home and with Top Gun Maverick, because I'm not just looking at Barbenheimer, I'm also looking at those two movies, because I think those two movies, Maverick and No Way Home, also sort of did something really special and brought so many people out to the movies. And so I think I look at those films and I see that multi-generational aspect of it. I see, you know, people who grew up watching the Tobey Maguire movies, who grew up watching the Andrew Garfield movies, who grew up watching the Tom Holland movies. You know, you have like multiple generations that can come together and have this vested interest in this film. You know, same with Maverick, people who grew up with Top Gun, who grew up with the soundtrack in their lives, you know, and they have this vested interest to go see Maverick. And like I said, with Barbie, it's there. And I think, you know, you could look at Barbie and Oppenheimer and say, which one of these films was along for the ride? I don't necessarily think either one. I think that they were both kind of just wound up together in this kind of marriage, because I think both are very successful. I think both are going to contend for many Oscars. It's not like one was riding the coattails of another one. So that was a very interesting scenario. But I do think there is something to that multi-generational. And even with Chris Nolan, because it's there with Barbie, obviously. But with Chris Nolan, you know, you have the kids who grew up on his Batman movies. You have the people who go all the way, the film nerds who go all the way back to like Memento and, you know, and kind of discovering him then when he was an indie, more of an indie filmmaker, all the way through Inception and Interstellar. And so, you know, you forget, like, you have multiple generations now that have been with Nolan and that are invested in his stuff. So I really do think if there is a recipe, it is in first finding a property that speaks to multiple generations, that has moms and dads saying, hey, I want to go see this just as much as my kids or as much as my grandkids, and we're all going to go see it. So I think that, for me, at least right now, is, I think, the beginning of a recipe, is finding those multiple generations that are interested in this one film property.
No, definitely. And then moving on to another big winner for this summer, what I thought was pretty big was animation this year. And specifically, I want to get into two films that before Barbenheimer and Barbie and Oppenheimer that did really well, specifically in June, was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And I think this year, with the success of that film, with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem, what does it say about audiences and the kind of animated films that they want to go see right now? Because if you look at Spider-Man, you look at Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they're different animation styles. They bring something new to the animation format. Is that what you're seeing when people go see these films and these films have success, or is it something different in given what these films have done throughout this summer movie season so far?
Yeah, I actually think that's the second biggest story of the summer. I think the first biggest story is Barbenheimer, of course. But I think if you say, okay, what's the second biggest story of the summer? I think it was in the animation and the success of the animation, how well it was. And because I even put Pixar's Elemental in there as well. I think all three of those films did really well. Elemental maybe kind of had more of a slow growth, which was another theme that we saw this summer. Some of these movies that, you know, didn't necessarily come firing out of the gate on opening weekend, some of them had a slow build in their box office over weeks and weeks, especially globally. I think we saw that with Pixar's Elemental. But yeah, Across the Spider-Verse, I mean, it's a follow-up to an Oscar-winning film. I think that film really does say, hey, it screams, we're doing something different here with animation. You've never seen animated films look like this before. So that screams out, come see us in theaters. And I think the Ninja Turtles also had a unique, distinct animation style. It had the highest Rotten Tomatoes score of any Ninja Turtles movie. It had Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg involved. So you knew like the humor was going to be modern. It was going to be funny. It was going to be enjoyable. I think all three of those films are super accessible for families. And all three of those films speak to what I was just saying about Barbie, that multi-generational. You know, Spider-Man, here's Spider-Man back. Spider-Man, I think, is the hottest comic book character right now on the big screen, both in live action and animation. So anything Spider-Man is going to get a lot of people kind of interested. And then the Turtles have been around, you know, since the 80s. And I remember growing up reading the graphic novels. And then so you have like speaking to people about this Ninja Turtles movie. And even the kids who voiced the Turtles, who are teenagers, which I thought was a unique approach and the first we've seen from the property, is that, you know, one kid's like, my first instance was watching the 1990 movie. You know, one kid was like, I grew up with the Nickelodeon cartoon. One kid was like, my first introduction was the Michael Bay produced movies, you know? And so you have like all of these different access points for Ninja Turtles that just makes people interested in seeing it. And then like the Mario movie, that Ninja Turtles movie, I think really did play to every era of the Ninja Turtles and gave wherever you kind of access the Ninja Turtles, it gave you something to reference. And also Across the Spider-Verse did that too, kind of paid tribute to every era of Spider-Man and every kind of different version of Spider-Man that we've seen. And so, you know, no matter where you kind of access Spider-Man for the first time, there's something there for you, you know. And Pixar is a little bit less obvious, but I think this was sort of Elemental very much felt like a classic Pixar movie and sort of Pixar returning to form and doing what they do really well. And so I think that that film just kind of, you know, was something that families loved seeing and that they told their friends and family to go see. And that's why that did well, too.
And what do you think, going to Elemental, why do you think that it started off maybe a little bit slower than some of the other Pixar films? Was it just maybe because in June there was a lot of films going on? Do you just think that it got lost in the shuffle a little bit and then it kind of found its audience as it the weeks went on? Or do you think it was something else? With Elemental?
I think there's probably a couple of different things there. I think June was packed. You know, this was the most packed summer that we've had since before COVID times, you know, and we had major releases coming out every single week. And so I think there's an element there to, like, you know, people aren't rushing out opening weekend anymore. You know, the urgency isn't necessarily what it once was. And so people were like, I'm going to wait till the second weekend to go see this, or I'm going to wait until my kid's school ends, or I'm going to wait until we get back from our June family vacation. And then we're going to go see it when we have nothing to do on a Saturday. So I do think that, you know, there is something to be said about that. You know, also Pixar, they had a couple of films that went straight home to Disney Plus, you know, and so I think that the Pixar brand, you know, what those decisions of kind of taking those Pixar movies and putting them at home, you know, may have kind of also caused a bit of confusion and also maybe kind of impacted the urgency to run out and see a Pixar movie on the big screen. So I think there's just a number of different factors there in terms of why it didn't explode in its opening weekend. Another one, it's original IP. It's not like Toy Story 5 or you know, one of those kind of sequels. And so it doesn't have this built-in fan base raring to go. So all of those reasons, I think, are why it kind of took a while to keep to grow. But yeah, I think that people just continued to find it and continued to, you know, people who saw it, families who saw it really enjoyed it. And, you know, eventually people went to go see it, just not, you know, not in that first weekend.
Right. And I think I remember we talked about this actually months ago when we talked about Avatar: The Way of Water, not a big opening weekend. But then, of course, we saw what the results were. One of the highest grossing films of all time. Not saying Elemental went to those heights, but it again, it found its audience as the months and the weeks went by during the summer season. So now I want to transition into another topic that I think was a big winner this summer movie season. And I feel like we wouldn't be doing it again justice in the summer movie season if we didn't talk about comic book films, specifically the Marvel Cinematic Universe and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 kicked off the summer movie season in probably the best way you can possibly imagine. It was a great, I think, closing chapter for me personally in the Guardians trilogy. I think it was a great beginning for what we wanted to see just in terms of box office financials for the summer movie season. So, Eric, for you, when you look back on what Guardians of the Galaxy did in kicking off the summer movie season, what lessons do you think Marvel can take away from this trilogy moving forward with the MCU? Because again, with Guardians, I didn't know who the Guardians were in terms of the comics when they came out in 2014, but they became this lovable ragtag team that audiences fell in love with. And you saw the results at the box office. What can Marvel utilize that moving forward with when maybe introducing lesser known characters that they're introducing in the MCU moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, and speaking to like Pixar's Elemental, Guardians Volume 3 was another one of those films that, you know, maybe didn't open to crazy record numbers for the MCU, but over the weeks grew more and more in its box office and wound up doing very well at the box office. And I think, you know, a lot of that is James Gunn. You know, a lot of that is who your writer and who your director is. I think James really understood these characters from the get-go. I think he understood where he wanted their story to go right from the start. You had the same creative man in charge of this trilogy. And I think he personalized it. It was very emotional. I think, you know, it was very funny. I think when Marvel is at its best, in my opinion, is when it's cosmic and it's when it's balances humor with that emotional weight at the same time. And it's got some really fun, inventive action sequences. So, you know, I look at these Guardians movies and I say, this is the MCU operating at its absolute best, because it's got all of these different elements in it. And it's got a way for the audience to access it however they want. You want to go just see the action, you're there. You want to see the comedy, you're there. You want to feel something, you're there. And I think that, you know, James Gunn really understood that about the Guardians. And I think he understands that about, people, you know, who go to the movies and what they want to see. And so I think he's just did a really tremendous job with it, you know. And I think he's just got such a fantastic sense of humor and understanding of character and story. And that's why I think it's smart that they brought him in to run DC. And I very much can't wait to see what his era of DC looks like, because I just think he's really does a really good job at creating stuff that is just super watchable.
Yeah, and also giving you a box of tissues to take with you in the theaters every time you go see his films. As I was crying like a little baby when talking about the Rocket Raccoon story and everything that went on there.
Exactly.
I thought, again,
then you look at something like his Suicide Squad movie, which is not necessarily a movie that you're going to be taking tissues into.
Yeah,
but it also does a really great job with story and character and art. It's super R-rated, and it just shows the versatility that he brings to the table, especially with these big ensemble films.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And I'm going to miss all these characters, whether they continue on or not. I think it was, again, a really good, solid ending for those characters in general. Then to move on to another big thing that happened this summer that I was just really happy to see in general. And it was summer comedies. No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence. You had Joyride, which I really enjoyed when it came out in early July. Even something like Strays, which I really had a fun time with. Will Ferrell, Jamie Foxx, just a raunchy kind of dog comedy, which was really enjoyable as well. So, Eric, when you look at the summer comedies of this season, what do you think audiences, studios can take forth from this season that maybe we can see more summer comedies again moving forward in 2024 and beyond? Because I would like to see more of them again. I miss the days of The Hangover and the Jump Street franchise being in the summer season. I want to see more of those again. I feel like I haven't gotten that all that much.
Yeah, we haven't. I think the R-rated comedy is sort of, you know, I don't necessarily know if it's hurting, because like you said, I think the R-rated comedies that were made that came out this summer were really enjoyable. And, you know, films like No Hard Feelings, I think, and Joyride are really being discovered at home right now in their home entertainment windows. You know, but I agree. I love R-rated comedies. I feel like the urgency to see them in a theater isn't what it once was in the days of Bridesmaids and The Hangover. And, you know, I feel like R-rated comedies go through these various eras of how people access them. But, you know, I think that they're movies that can be made on low budgets. And I think that they're movies that, you know, should continue to be made, and movies that can find a lot of success, you know, even if their box office isn't on fire, they can find a lot of success at home. And so I don't foresee an era of those movies stop. You know, I don't think they're going to stop making R-rated comedies. I think we'll continue to see them. I credit Universal, because Universal kind of is the one, you know, they have Strays. They did Cocaine Bear. They did Megan. You know, Universal is one of those studios that's like, look, we're still going to make every kind of movie that there is. And you know, because we feel like audiences will go see them. So I think as long as the studios kind of have that mindset and still continue to put out a versatile slate like that, I think we'll be in a good spot. But I'm like you, my favorite genre is like the R-rated comedy. I love them. I love it when they're unique and original. Joyride was my favorite one this summer. I hope we continue to see them and that audiences continue to find them.
And I got to ask you, for No Hard Feelings, since you do live in the greater New York area on Long Island, that film takes place on Long Island. Jennifer Lawrence, do you think she did justice for that area? Because is she from around in the New York area or not? Or
where is Jennifer Lawrence from? I don't think Amy Schumer, I know, is from Long Island, and I've talked to her about that. I don't know if Jennifer Lawrence is from Long Island. I don't think she is. I don't know off the top of my head. But yeah, without a doubt, she does justice to it. I mean, the accent, you know, I think you got to kind of you know, that Long Island accent, you know, is something that I think a lot of actors over the years have struggled with, especially New York set movies. Sometimes they have it, sometimes they don't have it. But I do think Jennifer Lawrence did a good job, without a doubt. I think it was great to see her return to comedy. I think she's one of the best at it. I think she's one of the best actresses of our time in general. I think she's really great. And she's really great at comedy. And so it was nice to see her back in that role again.
Yeah. And I just looked it up. She's from Kentucky. So
yeah, yeah, there you go. I didn't think she was from Long Island. No, but Schumer is. I've talked to Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
She's from, I think, Rockville Center.
Yeah, I believe so. And then, yeah, Jennifer Lawrence. I mean, whenever I see her in interviews, I remember when she was doing Hunger Game press, she just has that laid back energy that just you just laugh with and have a good time with at the same time. So,
yeah, yeah,
you want to hang out with that.
Yeah, you just want to go hang out at a bar with her. Like, that's kind of what the vibe she gives off, you know, and she's cool. I've interviewed her, I think, once or twice, and she's fun. She's a good interview.
That's awesome. But and then moving over to the last thing I want to talk about in terms of the summer movie season is summer horror. And there weren't a whole lot of, I think, big horror films this year, but there were some that really made an impact at the box office, specifically Talk to Me, which was an A24 pickup from, I believe it was Sundance earlier this year. And it's been doing great at the box office. So, Eric, even though horror, again, not huge this summer in terms of just making an impact like some of these other films, but doing very well for themselves in finding their audience this summer season, I believe, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. And if you're like a horror fan and you're like kind of antsy, don't worry. There's a lot of horror that's coming out over the next couple of months. So that Halloween corridor will be stacked with some stuff to go see. But yeah, I think for me, Talk to Me was definitely my favorite horror movie of the summer. You also have that Insidious movie. You also had The Boogeyman. But really, Talk to Me is what stood out. And I think that, you know, it took kind of a premise that is familiar, I think, you know, but it modernized it and it kind of brought it into, you know, kind of our need to go viral and that sense of virality, you know. And I thought it was really interesting. And the guys that directed it, wrote it and directed it are, you know, guys that are very popular on YouTube. And I think a lot of people kind of looked at this movie like, oh, it's from YouTubers. But I look at it as like, hey, get used to that, because we're, I think, entering an era where a lot of these up and coming filmmakers are going to be folks who've cut their teeth on social platforms, whether they were creating content for TikTok or YouTube. And, you know, I always thought when especially in the rise of social media, as it was kind of really starting to take off, I always was interested in like what the next era of filmmakers was going to look like, considering the fact that, you know, the creator era is upon us. And I think that, you know, these guys really proved, and these guys weren't just guys that made stuff on YouTube. They were also on sets. They had experience with productions, like they knew what they were doing. But you can tell that they just made a really fascinating movie that kind of is super accessible, more accessible than, say, like Hereditary from A24, which I love. But, you know, this one, I think, was something that all audiences, you know, could really get behind and figure out and understand and know what was happening. You know, and I think it also kind of taps into this trend that we're seeing in terms of like Smile or like films like even like The Boogeyman of like, I think of like It Follows. It's like, here's this thing that we're going to, that you just have now, and you have to figure out, you know, what it is and how to get rid of it or how to pass it on, you know, before time runs out, you know. And that's, you know, a familiar premise. We've seen it. You know, I think The Ring is one of those movies that really pops into my mind as one of the more successful films with that kind of premise. But we're seeing a lot more horror movies kind of dabble in that. Talk to Me dabbles in that, but they do so from a very interesting place. And yeah, I really dug it.
Yeah, I think you sold me on seeing it. I might have to watch it on VOD when it comes online, because I'm a big baby when it comes to horror movies. So,
oh, you haven't seen Talk to Me? Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
I would highly recommend it. I think it's really, really good. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I've heard reviews on it. And when I see those reviews, I'm like, I don't know if I'll make it through this movie in one piece. But I'll definitely try to check it out.
We'll survive. Yeah.
All right. But another thing that I want to get into as we wrap up the summer movie season on the bow, I know we talked about some of the bigger films, more as the big successful like lessons that we learned from the summer movie season. But there are some films that fall under the cracks a little bit, go under the radar. So would you, to our audience, recommend any films to go check out, whether they're in theaters right now or on VOD or on Vudu or somewhere that they can check them out if they haven't already?
Yeah, I mean, most of the summer movies are on Vudu now, and if they aren't, they're coming soon. But you know, I the Indiana Jones movie, I really enjoyed. I really had a good time with that film. I don't think it took off at the box office maybe the way that we expected it to, but I thought it was a really great conclusion for Indiana Jones, and I loved watching Harrison Ford and especially Phoebe Waller-Bridge in that movie. So I would say seek that out. Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, another film, didn't exactly light the box office on fire, but another really entertaining film and one of the highest rated on Rotten Tomatoes for the summer. And so people, you know, really, really, really enjoyed it. You know, there's a movie, Gran Turismo, that's coming out, or, you know, and so that film, it's rotten on Rotten Tomatoes, but I don't agree with that. I actually think it's a well-made film and really entertaining and a fascinating story that's real in terms of guy that played the video game and went on to become a real race car driver. So I thought that it was a good story. So I like that. Also, a little late August movie, Bottoms, in terms of comedies. You know, it's a comedy that really takes some big swings in terms of its tone. And I think Rachel Sennett and Ayo Edebiri, who are just really great together and have ton, like super chemistry together. And I think that's another one to seek out for sure.
Awesome. No, I definitely, I haven't checked out Bottoms yet. Really excited to see that one though. Gran Turismo, I agree with you. It's so good. It deserves more of a positive buzz than I think it's getting right now. But I really did like that film. David Harbour kills it. But moving on now away from the summer movie season into the fall season, a lot of exciting stuff to look forward to. And I just want to kind of go through each of the months and talk about kind of the films that people should be on the lookout for. Before we do that, I know one of the big things hovering over the rest of this movie season, of course, is the double strikes going on with the writers and the actors. And as of this recording, no deals have been struck as of this recording in late August. So we're still going on with the strikes right now. But Eric, again, I'm not going to go into it a whole lot, but I just want to get your thoughts. Do you think any major films could potentially be moved off? I know the big one right now that a lot of people are worrying about is Dune Part 2. Do you think any other films might be moved off of their calendar release right now? Kraven the Hunter was another one, Challengers. But do you think anything else major might move away from their slot as of this moment?
I think there's always a chance for something to shift, especially a film that's got like a star-studded ensemble that, you know, the studio feels like they need those celebrities on the red carpet, especially, you know, in other parts of the world, and that it's you know, essential to the promotion of that film and the success of that film. And so without a doubt, I mean, but if there's anything that we've been used to for the last few years, it's movies moving, you know, around. I mean, Top Gun Maverick moved, I want to say, 5 times, you know, before it found that like late May spot and then became this juggernaut of a movie. So yeah, I mean, there's chances that stuff will move, but I also think it's important to note that this isn't COVID anymore. Like, movie theaters aren't closing. The movies aren't going anywhere. You know, regardless of how long the strikes go on for, your local movie theaters will be open and there will be movies playing in them. You know, some of this stuff, some of these bigger movies may shift back, some won't. And even if they do shift back, it's an opportunity for something else to slide into that date, something either smaller, something original, a new discovery, an old release. You know, Jurassic Park is back in theaters right now. American Graffiti is back in theaters right now. They're both celebrating anniversaries. So, no matter what, there will be movies to go see. It's just a matter of like, you know, what shifts, what doesn't, and, you know, time will tell.
So moving now into the fall season, I want to kind of kick everything off, of course, with the month of September. And when, Eric, when you look at the playing field of September, it's kind of a smorgasbord of like potential big hits that could go down. So is there anything that we should be on the lookout for that should get us excited to kind of kick everything off in the month of September?
Yeah, I think there's a few movies that speak to, I think, a wide array of audiences. The Equalizer 3, right off Labor Day weekend, that's one that I would recommend. I feel like this trilogy has kind of flown a little bit under the radar, this crime thriller. I think Denzel Washington has done such a great job, as has director Antoine Fuqua. He's been, you know, the two of them have been through all three of these movies. This is kind of being billed as the last of the trilogy. And if you haven't seen those first two Equalizer movies, I would say check them out. I love it. It's sort of like an everyday everyman who just has a certain particular set of skills that he's reluctant to use, but you know, does in order to sort of protect others. And this one, they go to Italy. It's well done. It's well made. And I think Denzel just really kind of just amplifies everything around him when he's in something. So I would say don't sleep on Equalizer 3. Speaking of horror, there's a sequel to The Nun that's coming out. There's a couple of horror movies in September. There's another one from Neon called It Lives Inside that comes out later in the month. There's one that's on several hundred screens called Satanic Hispanics. There's a bunch of different kind of horror that you're going to see rolling out in September. I think The Nun 2 may be the most well-known and one of the higher performing of this Conjuring universe is that Nun movie. So The Nun 2 comes out early September. We're used to seeing Warner Brothers with a horror movie in early September. So there you go. There's The Nun 2. There's a movie called Dumb Money that is based on the GameStop stock and the way that kind of a bunch of folks kind of drove that stock price up. And what happened there, and it's got a great cast in it, Seth Rogen, Paul Dano, Pete Davidson. There's just a lot of different people in it, and it's a fun time. So Dumb Money, I would say, for anybody that is, you know, looking for a real life kind of story and followed the GameStop phenomenon and curious to know how that went down. I would say it's kind of a cross between The Social Network and The Big Short. Kind of, you know, think of those two movies when you think of Dumb Money. So I would say check that one out. And then also Kenneth Branagh, you know, has his third Agatha Christie murder, you know, mystery, A Haunting in Venice. And, you know, he does a great job with those films and they're always compelling and fun to watch. And the murder mystery is a hot genre right now after those Knives Out movies. And so I do think that, you know, always take a chance on Kenneth Branagh. And I think that Haunting in Venice film is another one to check out. And then one more, Sam, I'm going to give you is The Creator from Gareth Edwards, a big original science fiction. Gareth Edwards did Rogue One. He also did the Godzilla movie. I love the way this looks. I haven't seen it, but I love the way it looks. We don't get big original sci-fi every day. So I'm like, just cherish this movie because these kinds of movies are super rare these days. And so if you're somebody that's like, I'm tired of the sequels and the franchises, but I want to see a big original movie that isn't a franchise, The Creator comes out, I think, September 29th. That's mm-hmm. one to check out too.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited for The Creator. I'm a huge fan of John David Washington, who I want to see him in everything nowadays. And yeah, original sci-fi is definitely something that is very rare in today's day and age. And also the fact that if you ever put Dream on and make an epic version of that song in a trailer, I will go see your film no matter what. So,
well, and you're wearing a Rogue One shirt too, so I know you're going to see The Creator.
Oh yeah, I'm a huge Gareth Edwards fan as well, so I'm all about everything The Creator. Another one that I didn't hear you mention, but I want to get your take on it. Expendables 4. Never thought we'd get another Expendables film, but I'm here for more with these guys once again. You get Megan Fox, you get Jason Statham in this once again. Sylvester's back. You get Andy Garcia. Is that one that we should be excited about going into September?
Yeah, I mean, why not? You know, especially if you're somebody that enjoys the Expendables movies and you like them and you like seeing like the kind of the various ensembles they put together for them. You know, I think that look, it's the fourth one. So clearly there's an audience out there. And so, yeah, I would say if you're looking to kind of fill an action need, I would say The Expendables is that film for September.
All right. So I'll definitely be on the lookout for that one. But transitioning over now to October, which is, of course, spooky season. It's Halloween time. It's where all the horror films really kind of come out in that time period. So I know you'll get into those, Eric. But also, are there any other October films that we should be on the lookout for? I know there's some potential awards friendly films in there as well that could be pretty big in that month for October.
Yeah, Killers of the Flower Moon, the Martin Scorsese movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro. That one, I think, is going to be a major Oscar contender. I think we could potentially see Scorsese versus Christopher Nolan versus Greta Gerwig at the Oscars. And so, yeah, I mean, without a doubt, I think that is one of the most compelling releases, not just of October, but of the entire year. You know, whenever Martin Scorsese has a new film, I mean, everybody kind of sits up and pays attention, much in the same way they do Christopher Nolan. So I do think that that film premiered at Cannes. It got raves. It's already sort of one of those, front runners for a Best Picture nomination and maybe even a Best Picture win. And as we sit here today in late August, it really is Oppenheimer versus Killers of the Flower Moon. For that Best Picture in terms of what experts are predicting. And so, I would say without a doubt, see that one.
Yeah, no, that one I'm really excited about. And also with Killers, before we go on to some of the other stuff in October, though, is the fact that it's coming out in theaters, but it's an Apple original. It's from Apple TV Plus. So before it even makes its way into streaming, it's coming into a theatrical exclusive window alone. So this is a really big deal in terms of that, is it?
Well, I think what has been what we have seen yet lately is that Apple and Amazon are both sort of double downing on the theatrical experience. And so, yes, their films are going to be on their services after the theatrical run, but they're giving their films a sizable theatrical run and a theatrical footprint before they go on to their service. And so I think that's really the real difference between, say, Apple and Amazon and Netflix. And it's been great to see. And so, Apple is partnering with Paramount, or they're partnering with Sony on the Napoleon movie, the Ridley Scott movie. They're partnering with Paramount on the Killers of the Flower Moon. And so what we're seeing is that these streamers are partnering up with your traditional studios. The traditional studio is sort of mapping out its wide theatrical run because the studios, that's their bread and butter. That's what they know. And then once that theatrical run is over, it goes onto their service.
I mean, anytime I get to see a Scorsese film on the big screen, I will do it. And this looks like to be another big epic film from him. And now moving on to some of the more spooky titles coming out in October, what should people be looking forward to in that month, or really kind of they want to scratch that scare itch leading up to October 31st? What are some titles that people can be on the lookout for in that month?
Yeah, I would say the right away, the Exorcist movie, Exorcist Believer. That one is from David Gordon Green. And, he's the one who just recently did those three Halloween movies, the sequels with Jamie Lee Curtis. And I think he did a good job with them. And so this is sort of, he's doing something similar with Exorcist, where it's kind of like a sequel to the original Exorcist. And this one has two girls who are possessed in it. The trailer looks super creepy. The posters are really creepy. And so I think in terms of what's going to be the scariest movie that comes out in October, I'm looking at that movie as being the scariest. I also think if you're in the mood for gore and torture, there is a 10th Saw film that is coming out. But this is a unique Saw film because it takes place, I think, after the first one or after the second one in its narrative. So it's actually between two earlier Saw films. Tobin Bell is returning as Jigsaw. And so that one is going to have some gnarliness to it. This is the 10th Saw film. So you know what a Saw film is like at this point. So that's coming out. And then also there's another video game adaptation of a game called Five Nights at Freddy's, which is a bit of a fan favorite, bit of a wild game. Kind of reminds me of like if Chuck E. Cheese characters, you know, went a bit horror. And so this one looks fun, looks wild, looks crazy. And interestingly, that film is also coming out on Peacock on the same day. And so that is a day and date. It's going to be in theaters and it's going to be on Peacock.
No, that's very exciting. I'm excited for all those titles. And the one thing I'm actually interested in with The Exorcism, do you think it can reach the success of the first 2018 Halloween film? Because to me, what's interesting is that Halloween, of course, has Michael Myers, has the name, Jamie Lee Curtis. The Exorcism, I think for movie fans like us and for some people, of course, within the horror realm, The Exorcism is big. But do you think that will still come in with general audiences? They'll be like, oh, I want to go see this new take or this new iteration or continuation of The Exorcism with these new characters along with some of the old ones?
Yeah, and like, yeah, Ellen Burstyn is returning to this new Exorcist, and she was in the original. You know, I think the hardest thing is that, you know, Halloween does have Michael Myers, and everybody knows Michael Myers. People dress up as Michael Myers every year. And so whenever you have like the physical embodiment of, you know, evil, that, you know, is one of the best selling Halloween costumes every year. You know, I think that film is always going to have, you know, maybe a better shot at resonating, at least at on the onset. But, you know, everybody knows The Exorcist. I think the one thing about The Exorcist is that, you know, it's known as, you know, among the scariest movies of all time. And I think that that one, I think that what they're going to do here is something very similar. And I think that they're aiming to be really scary, you know, and I think that is an important note for it. And I think, you know, again, it's going to be word of mouth. I think a lot of people will know The Exorcist. They'll know what to expect. Interestingly enough, one of the most popular movies on Netflix right now is The Pope's Exorcist, which may actually help, you know, may help with people kind of be jonesing for exorcism movies. You know, it's just another story of one of these movies that maybe doesn't like the box office on fire, but then all of a sudden finds this massive audience on a streaming service. And so, but that massive audience for The Pope's Exorcist may ultimately lead people to sort of be jonesing for exorcism movies, which may help ultimately The Exorcist when it arrives in theaters. But, you know, I think David Gordon Green did a really good job with those Halloween movies. I think he's somebody that understands how to scare. And I'm really curious to see what he does here. I think he's a really good filmmaker, and I will always show up for what he makes.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat as you. Even something like The Exorcism, I will definitely go check that out in theaters. I might wait for Talk to Me at home, but I'm definitely checking out some of these horror films when they come out in October. Somehow, I'll brave through it, Eric. I don't know how, but I will. So I'm definitely excited for all those titles as well. So moving on to the month of November now, which I'm labeling this November as blockbuster season, because there are a lot of big potential blockbusters in November, Eric. So what are some of these films that I think are on a lot of people's most anticipated lists, not even of November or the fall, but in just in general, what can people look forward to in November as they get ready for turkey time, the holidays, and might want to go take some of their families to see these movies as well?
Yeah, I mean, if the slate holds the way it is as of this conversation, I mean, right off the bat, you have Dune Part 2, you know, followed by The Marvels, which is the next MCU movie the next week, followed by a Hunger Games prequel, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. There's a Trolls movie in there. There's a new Disney animated movie called Wish that's coming out around Thanksgiving. Ridley Scott's Napoleon is in there. Taika Waititi's new film, Next Goal Wins, is in there. So right off the bat, just mentioning those, there you're seeing a mix of like blockbusters, of familiar franchises, of franchises that people are really excited about, and also smaller films, awards contenders, family films. And so it's really, this November, I think, is one of the more exciting months of the entire year in terms of the way the slate is positioned. I want to see every one of those movies. You know, and then you look at something like Dune. I think Denis Villeneuve, like Christopher Nolan, like Martin Scorsese, is becoming one of those filmmakers that like demands to be seen on a big screen. And like his work has just been phenomenal. And I think he's one of the most exciting filmmakers working today. Just his sense of visuals and, you know, of big screen movie making is just phenomenal. And so, I mean, without a doubt, like that Dune sequel is got to be one of the more exciting movies to see. If it stays there, if it moves into next year, it's going to be one of the most exciting movies to go see next year. Even if Dune did move, I think he's still, it's a massive month, you know, between the Marvels and the return of Captain Marvel and Miss Marvel being on the big screen for the first time and the Hunger Games coming back. You know, I think that is a real opportunity for that franchise to come back and come roaring back to life and to maybe start a new path. And there's a ton of Hunger Games fans out there. So I'm looking forward to them and, you know, having a new film to go watch. And then Disney's animated movies around Thanksgiving always do well. So they have Wish, and that Taika Waititi movie, Next Goal Wins, looks like a really fun underdog sports film. So yeah, I think I'm looking forward to everything that's coming out in November. It's a good month and one of the more exciting ones.
Yeah, no, it looks really exciting. The one thing I want to talk about with Dune real quick, you just covered a lot of it, was also there have been reports that it's going to be having a 6-week IMAX run, I believe. If I'm wrong on that, let me know. But I believe it's 6 weeks. That means Marvel's isn't going to have an IMAX run there because it'll be literally the next week after Dune releases. So how big is that? The fact that IMAX is giving those screens to Dune, does that show kind of the popularity of what this film could potentially do if it holds, if everything is good when it comes out on November 3rd?
Yeah, I mean, completely honest with you, I have not heard that. So I don't know if that is accurate or how accurate that is, and then how many screens that may take away from the other films. I don't know. So I can't speak accurately to that. But I do think that, you know, Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer having IMAX, you know, fairly exclusively for several weeks, I think really, really helped that film because it kind of demanded to be seen on IMAX. And I think Dune Part 2 is another one of those films. It's going to be you're going to demand to see it in IMAX. And so without a doubt, that can help. IMAX having one of the best years it's ever had. I think Oppenheimer may be the fifth highest grossing movie for IMAX, which is wild because if you look at the four movies ahead of it, it's like Star Wars, Avengers. It's like all the big, you know, the big franchises. So for like Oppenheimer to be alongside them, you know, I think that speaks not just to the film and to Christopher Nolan, but also it having, you know, a run like that. So where it has most of the IMAX screen. So yeah, I think that's really important for a film like that.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then moving on to November, like some of the awards players that I'm really looking forward to. The one that I'm excited about in November, it was just recently released, the trailer with the release dates, and it's Maestro, which is Bradley Cooper's new film. I love The Star Is Born. I'm excited to see where Bradley Cooper can do more as a director, and this seems like he's taking his artistic creativity to the next level in this movie. What should we look forward to in that movie when it comes out? And is it a potential big awards player like A Star Is Born was in 2018?
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, without a doubt, I think it's a big awards contender. And, you know, I give credit to Bradley Cooper. I think he's really established himself as a director to watch and somebody to go see. And, you know, I think the first trailer for Maestro, it looks good. It's a little bit it's still a bit shrouded in like, what is this film about other than it being a love story? So I think it needs to maybe show some more of its cards as it gets closer to release, but it does look really, it looks well made. It looks really well done. I think Bradley Cooper, I'm sure, will be in the running for an Oscar nod, and the film could be up there in terms of best picture. But I mean, it's still early. I haven't seen enough of it yet. But without a doubt, I think especially coming off Star Is Born and what he was able to achieve there, I think Maestro is definitely a film to watch for awards.
And then finally, to wrap this all up, even though it is in the at the end of the year, more towards maybe the winter, but I still want to talk about it, of course, is December. And we've got some big ones coming out in that month as well, Eric. What films can we look forward to kind of wrap up the year, enjoy the holidays with, that people can get excited about?
Yeah, I mean, there is a DC movie. There is an Aquaman sequel that is coming out. It hasn't come out. It is still set to come out. So I think, you know, if you're looking to scratch that superhero itch, Aquaman is one of the most successful global releases that DC ever had. And so, of course, a sequel to that is something that I'm looking forward to. I'll see anything that James Wan makes. I think he's such a great filmmaker. So Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, there is a Wonka prequel starring Timothy Chalamet that looks really big and fun and family friendly. So that is coming out. Also, The Color Purple, not a remake to the Steven Spielberg movie, but more of an adaptation of the musical. And that film, I think, looks big and powerful and just really well made and well done. Big ensemble cast there as well. And so I expect that to not just be a big film of December and of that Christmas time period, but also at the Oscars. I think that's another film that could slide in there alongside Oppenheimer and Killers of the Flower Moon and really make a run at Best Picture. So that one as well. Also Illumination, who did the Super Mario Brothers movie. They are back with an original movie called Migration, about birds migrating. But Illumination, you know, even if you're like, what's Migration? I think Illumination, in their short stint here as an animation company, has really kind of taken over. And all of their movies perform well. You know, we're talking the Minions. We're talking the Despicable Me movies. The Super Mario now is going to be a juggernaut. Nintendo, I imagine we're going to see now, I think they're working on a Zelda movie. So we're going to see that whole property now explode into the Nintendoverse through Illumination. They've done Sing. You know, they know what they're doing in the animated world. So I look at that Migration movie as being a potential juggernaut. Maybe not on opening weekend, but, you know, similar in the way that Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, just kind of trucked along and wound up making a mint after several weeks. I think Migration is also one of those films that could just truck along and make a mint over several weeks of winter.
I mean, listen, families need to be entertained during the winter break. So if that's the film, I could not be surprised seeing that make a really good cash grab at the box office. As you said, Eric, make some good mint at the box office. So to kind of wrap this all up in a big bow, I want to take out the crystal ball and predict for the fall winter movie season from September to December, in terms of what we could be talking about at the end of the year. What are some of the big films that could come out victorious, both in terms of chatter, box office, just overall, what are the films that we'll be talking about at the end of the year that'll emerge victorious from the fall movie season slate?
Yeah, I mean, I think if Dune remains, I think Dune, you know, without a doubt, I think, because not just is it going to, you know, light up the box office because the first one was really well done. But I also think that it's a huge awards contender, without a doubt. I mean, the thing looks gorgeous. So I think that would be the biggest story. You know, definitely curious to see what they do with the Marvels. I think the MCU, and, you know, not only do they have the Marvels, but they also have the second season of Loki premiering. And so, you know, I think we're going to be talking about the MCU at the end of the year and so where we're at and where the Marvels leaves us off. I think The Color Purple, I think that's going to be a big story for December. I think it's going to be a big movie. I think it's going to be a big awards contender. It's got that Oprah Winfrey factor as well. And I think that is also going to be a big film that's got multi-generational impact to it. And I think it's the one that, you know, moms and dads are going to remember, you know, the Spielberg one, and, you know, there's people who went to the musical. And I just think it's going to be, it's a story that kind of stands, you know, alone for, you know, decades. And I think people are there's a lot of people that are going to be interested in The Color Purple. So I'm looking at those three movies as really being the most significant. I think the one that has the best, you know, ability to surprise us is that Hunger Games prequel. It's been a while since the Hunger Games. It's a whole new cast. It's a prequel. And so, you know, can it revive that magic that those first four films had, starring Jennifer Lawrence, and they really put Jennifer Lawrence on the map. And so I think that Hunger Games movie has a chance to surprise. And then, you know, those two animated movies, Wish and Migration, are both original films, you know, one's from Disney, one's from Illumination. And so, you know, we don't get a ton of original animation. And so it's great. And I think either one of those or both could turn out to be big juggernaut releases.
Well, we'll see if all that turns out to hopefully be true at the end of the year. We'll look to hopefully have you back on for that. But once again, everyone, Eric, thank you so much for coming on to this podcast. Again, we love having you on here whenever we get a chance. So where can people find you, what you're doing now, what your social media, where can people look to see all the latest from Fandango, Rotten Tomatoes, you on social media?
Yeah, I would always say follow me on the X platform, formerly Twitter, at Eric with a K Davis. I spend most of my time over there talking about movies, so you can follow me there. I am This Is Eric Davis on Instagram. I would say, you know, follow at Fandango on all social channels. I have a lot to do with those social channels and the stuff that's out there. So, you know, follow those and, you know, catch up on some of our interviews from this summer. You know, our Oppenheimer interview on our Fandango YouTube page is our most watched interview ever as a brand, which is wild. It's over almost 3.5 million views on YouTube. It's a really great conversation. And, you know, we've really worked hard, and I've worked hard this year to put together these long form conversations that have really been wonderful. And so we have Barbie, Oppenheimer, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Gran Turismo. We did one for Bottoms. We did one for Blue Beetle. We did one for Indiana Jones. You know. So if you know, you saw all these movies this summer, you didn't get a chance to watch some of our long form interviews, I would say go over to our YouTube page and watch them there, because, you know, you won't see this kind of stuff anywhere else.
Well, definitely do that. We'll have the audience do that for sure. Once again, Eric Davis, thank you so much for coming on. We'll hope to have you back on at the end of the year and see how this all really turned out at the very end with the fall movie season preview. So thank you again for coming on.
You got it, man. Have a good one, Sam.
All right. You too. And once again, a big thank you to the managing editor over at Fandango and a good friend to the podcast, Eric Davis, for coming on and talking about the summer movie season and this upcoming fall movie preview as well. So a lot of stuff to be excited about, a lot of stuff to be on the lookout for in these next couple of months. And with all of that down and out of the way, that will do it for this edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out my content for more stuff. You can check me out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, SoundCloud, and much more. Also, make sure to tune in onto the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions, and be sure to check out the other amazing shows that are on there, such as You Mad Bro, the number one source to see what the internet is pissed off about on a weekly basis. Also, make sure to check out Goal Driven Professionals, geared toward improving client relations, the return on investment, and customer acquisition costs for independent businesses and services. Also, make sure to check out The Daily Grind, a weekly motivational podcast with Kelly Johnson, giving you everyday tips and key takeaways on reaching your goals. Also along the way, make sure to check out these other amazing shows on the Podcast Solutions, such as Wrestle Addict Radio, WrestleMania Podcast, and Midnight Showing. You can check these out and so much more on the website, ambiguouspodcastsolutions.com, also on Facebook and Twitter at Real Ambiguous. And if you want to check out Canopy Treehouse, use the coupon code AMBIGUOUS. Also, when you get a chance, make sure to follow me on social media. You can find me on X at Bissell Samuel, that's BUSSELLSAMUEL, and also on Facebook at Sam Bissell. And also, if you want to check out the video format of the interview I just did with Eric talking about the summer movie season and fall movie season, you can check that out at the Sam Bissell Podcast YouTube channel on YouTube. You can see the full video of that on the site as well. And I'll also include a part of that in the link to the post that I put for this podcast today. So once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. And until next time, keep on screening.